phenomenal because we have pretty much everything tied into one button. It's really cool, and you can just do a trigger fire and you've got all, everything is happening at once instead of having to build it in a switcher and have your bug pop on through there. We can do it all through show control.
Hello and welcome to the Daktronics Experience Podcast. My name is Justin Oxner and I'm here with Matt Anderson. Today we're joined by Chris Hagstrom-Jones, Assistant General Manager of Marketing and Media for the South Bend Cubs. He shares his experience in the broadcast production industry, how the Cubs use their displays and run their productions, as well as their plans for adding to their future productions. And we're here today with Chris. Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks so much for having me on. And I know it's just, you know, getting ready for opening day, and there's a lot of Daktronics planning that's happening right now, actually. So it's perfect timing to chat.
Yeah, it's a busy time of year with opening day coming up, and Matt's over here, of course, as well, and ready to get hop into this conversation, right?
Yep. Hi, Chris, and we do appreciate you taking the time to talk to us, especially like you said, with everything up and going. So looking forward to the conversation today.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, just cut me off, guys, because I like to talk a lot. And I don't think your listeners are going to want to hear me drone on forever. So I'm just very appreciative you guys are wanting to talk to about us and about the South Bend Cubs.
Yeah. And like you said, it's about the South Bend Cubs and what you guys have going on. We want to hear all that story, too. But before we get into that, Chris, can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you got to be where you're at with the Cubs?
Sure. So I started this whole journey in sports. I was originally wanted to be a broadcaster. I went to a high school up in the north suburbs of Chicago. Kind of fell into my love of sports in that realm. With we had a student radio station. I had kind of a little bit of work on. We had morning announcements, so I'd do stuff in front of the camera. And I thought, oh, talent! This would be pretty awesome. So I went to Southern Illinois University Carbondale to get my radio television degree, and was blown away by the opportunities that I received there. So much so that I realized that I was not very good at what I wanted to do, as much practice as we all try to have. And, you know, the broadcasting industry is such a tough industry to get into because, you know, everybody wants to do it. But what I found was I had a greater passion for being behind the camera, behind the scenes, not just being that guy on the microphone. So I got a little more work behind the camera. I got to work with a great team down in Southern Illinois called the Southern Illinois Miners. They were an independent baseball team that just moved to Marion, Illinois, which is just next to Carbondale. Got a chance to work there for a couple of years on a much, you know, more inferior video board product, but a product nonetheless. And from there, I went back to my alma mater at SIU when they got video boards because they needed an expert. And apparently, right out of college, 3 years in, I'm an expert. So I took that as a compliment. Got to work there and create their show and their product. And from that point, this is right around now, 2000. Oh, gosh, I guess that would be 2013 when I got a call from a friend of mine, Bob Misavich, who some people might recognize from in the industry. He's like, hey, I've got this team that needs a producer. They need the content creator. So I came up, saw South Bend, Indiana. It was right after a snowstorm, so I knew what I was getting into when it comes to Northwest Indiana.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, I think I can do this. So that's what got me into South Bend.
And kind of going back, you know, when you mentioned first getting into it and realizing that you wanted to be behind the scenes instead of in front of the scenes, what was it maybe when you started to learn about all the work behind the scenes that intrigued you the most? Because I know, I mean, we'll eventually get to today, but there's so much behind the scenes, right? Mm-hmm. There's so many different areas, content creation, replay, technical directing. Kind of what was it about that side that intrigued you to keep following that?
I think it was the creativity. Mm-hmm. I always joke with my mentor, Mike Reese. He was the voice of the Salukis for many, many years and just recently retired. Although I knew his retirement wasn't going to last now that he's calling Illinois baseball when they were running into the Final Four. But we talked, and he's a great mentor who helped me through a lot of my career, whether that be in front of the microphone or behind. And I always make this joke saying, well, Mike Henry one day and said, you know, Chris, you're just not that good. And he didn't really do that, but I love to tell that story and joke about it. But it was seeing the work that he put in front of the microphone allowed me to kind of see some of the behind the scenes work. And it was working with him and with SIU and the radio TV program they have there that I was like, oh, this is, you know, there's a whole nother side to this. It's not just preparing for a game or preparing to be on the microphone or studying your game notes. There's a lot of prep work that goes into it beforehand. And so I actually went an extra semester to SIU. I could have graduated in my 4 years, but I wanted to go an extra semester to get more production classes out of the way, which I didn't take at the time. Mm-hmm. And when I took this internship in the summer of 2007 with the Southern Illinois Miners, they didn't have a production manager. They just had a marketing guy and hired a bunch of kids from SIU to run the production side of things. And it was that moment where I'm like, okay, I love this. The hours are long, but man, this is fun. We're creating this intro for the team where we're creating these graphics, and just kind of having that creative freedom is what got me into what I wanted to do. So without the Miners, without the folks like Tim Arsenault and Eric Haig, and their field manager, Mike Pino, who is now up in the, with the, Joliet, Slammers, is it the Slammers? Yeah, it's Slammers now. Mm-hmm. Apparently I've been in this industry long enough that old team names are just popping into my head and I want to call them the Jackhammers.
Oh yeah.
But, without those folks and you know, kind of helping mold my career path, I definitely wouldn't be where I'm at today.
So you mentioned the behind the scenes stuff in the creative side of it, and even making that intro and things. For you, Chris, was it always sports? Was it sports related, or was it baseball, or kind of how did that come about?
It was sports in general. My dad helped me fall in love with the Cubs and baseball. My memory actually of that is my first game was a White Sox game that I finally remember. By not falling out of that upper level that you know, sometimes when you get to old baseball stadiums,
yeah,
those seats look like they're just towering, and you lean the wrong way at the old Comiskey Park, you could fall out. but my first Cubs memory, which is where I'm a huge Cubs fan, so which is why being with South Bend Cubs is perfect. Mm-hmm. I got to sit on the first base side for opening day 1998. It was the first game after Harry Carey had passed away, so there was this pageantry. You've got balloons, you know, flying everywhere. You have celebrities, you have ceremony. And that's, I think, what helped me push me into this direction is there's this this pomp and circumstance, the pageantry of just an opening day, mm-hmm. which I try to mimic as much as I can year in and year out. But there's just something about that moment that made me fall in love with baseball in particular and sports. So that was kind of my turning point to actually be in professional sports. So, like, I want to do this. I want to be... My actual phrase I told my dad was, I want to be for the Cubs. I want to play for the Cubs, which I was not an athletic guy, so I didn't really play, but okay. Just being able to be a part of the organization is great.
Yeah, so, I mean, like you said, that pageantry that kind of goes into it, that's kind of, you're taking that what you saw there at that event and then kind of saying, okay, that's what I'm going to do in my career and try and put that on for the South Bend Cubs?
Yeah, it's I really honestly didn't realize until as we're talking now and thinking about what was my point, what was the pivotal moment, it would say it would be that. And I know there's a lot of creative minds out there that listen to this podcast that lean on professional wrestling. There is such a creative outlet in professional wrestling, even back then, with their video montages and their hype videos they created. And yeah. Of course, now the whole show and the whole world that they've created with, whether it's WWE, TNA, AEW, they just have created such a show that a lot of teams, you could tell who watches those shows because they pull from those. Like the professional wrestling organizations of the world, they are the leaders, I think, in that showmanship. And that's kind of what I think a lot of us try to emulate now is how can we put that show on at our own venues?
And that's an interesting take, too. I hadn't quite thought about it like that, but they definitely do, especially, I mean, I was even thinking during COVID times when they were still doing WWE type stuff, but it was all video everywhere. They did like video people in the crowd versus cardboard cutouts even, right? Like,
well, yeah. I mean, you see that crossover a little bit. They always had their walk-in entrance songs down to the ring, and now you got your walk-up song to the plate, right? It's kind of crossing over.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I really think, you know, players, yeah, there was walk-up music, I think, maybe in the 90s, but I mean, that really originated, I think, with WWF at the time.
When I think of walk-up songs for baseball, I immediately can't help but think of Major League and Wild Thing.
Oh, yeah.
from the outfield. But it's kind of, I would say it's kind of an interesting concept because, I mean, in the minor league area right now, right? Like, that's an area that even Major League Baseball says they look to for ideas, because it's, I don't know if it's to say you can get away with a lot more, but you kind of can, because you can do a lot more shows and different things and interactivity with there. Is that kind of how, I wouldn't say attract you to kind of keep going that route, because you do have a little bit more freedom in that area?
You know, I would say it's probably maybe 50-50. It's the flexibility of, at the major league level, there's a person for everything. And then they have three people below them, and they've got five people below them. So when you're trying to execute an idea, not that this is a bad thing by any means, but you've got layers upon layers of approvals that you have to go through. Mm-hmm. And obviously it's all for very, very good reasons. At the minor league level, we can come up with an idea to spin a wheel of prizes. And I run that to my boss and say, hey, here's an idea for Spin to Win Saturday, which was minor league baseball's best promotion of 2022. He's like, okay, do it. I mean, there's no...
Done.
Yeah, it's just done. It's not one of those that you have to talk about for hours on end and then run it through five different departments. It's, we can just come up with an idea and try it. Now, they're not always going to work, but sometimes you get an idea like the exploding whales out in Eugene, or the calf fries, I believe, down in Texas. I mean, there's just so many cool ideas that you're going to try it. It may not work, or it might be the next best thing in the world. So, at the minor league level, we can have those opportunities, I think, versus the major league level, where you make one mistake and it's going to be on every blog and website and social media yes. channel, and you're going to get ostracized for the next, 2 months.
Yeah, that's probably why they have a thicker approval process, so to speak. Right. Whereas you're still talking about some sort of approval process. It's like, yes, we still need to sign off on this. We need to make sure the right people are aware of it. But it's just got less layers to go through before it can happen out in front of everybody at the ballpark.
Exactly, yeah. There's that. We don't have to think about we do, of course, think about the legal and the PR side of things, just mm-hmm. to make sure everybody's happy. But there's far fewer things we have to worry about than what a major league team does.
You're going through the different ideas, and I couldn't help but think of some different stadiums that I've seen that have our displays in the outfield, and they do that. What was Johnny Depp was like chasing them when he was in Pirates of the Caribbean.
It
was
Race the Pirate,
or it was the Jurassic Park one.
Yeah, they did the T-Rex.
T-Rex, and you're running with galvanizers around the warning track, trying not to, and then the operator would hit the button to switch the T-Rex mm-hmm. from showing up, and he's just waiting to catch him up.
Yeah.
And I love that. I love that, with seeing teams do that with their video walls. It reminds me so much of Nick Arcade growing up. Like, if you ever watched Nick Arcade, it was a show that, as a kid, you got to be basically put into a video game. And this is the early 90s when some of that green screen technology is relatively new. Mm-hmm. But they're climbing up things, and they're clicking coins, or they're trying to shoot a fireball. I mean, all this stuff, again, came from our childhood, and now we're making it happen in real life. It's just so cool.
Yeah. We're over here quickly searching, saying, okay, we've got to look this up. This looks amazing or sounds amazing, right?
Oh, yeah. definitely look up Nick Arcade. It was a wild time. You still have Super Nintendo, Nintendo, Sega games, and then you're being transported during that game into a game. It's just so cool.
Oh, okay. We found a couple screenshots quick. I remember seeing that.
Do you?
Yeah, that's crazy. So yeah, you're talking about the different ways that you can incorporate some of the technology for those promotions that you can just kind of come up with and run up the chain really fast and introduce into the stadium. Maybe that's a good way to segue to that technology that the South Bend Cubs have at Four Winds Field. Obviously, you recently worked with Daktronics to bring in a new display, but you've had some for a while now. So can we ask, what was your experience working with the technology at your stadium there?
Well, we talked about this before, that I always wanted to be a Daktronics operator. Mm-hmm. I worked with some inferior boards in the past, and I became really good at repairing them because they broke often.
You had to.
Quite honest.
Yeah.
I had to, because your boss is like, why is this not working? Like, well, there's not much I can do because of the way this was built, or because there's water getting in here that they'd, drill these holes so they would drain. The water's actually going up into the board because they drilled these holes. No. So that was my first experience with our board in Southern Illinois, was there was water getting in from somewhere. And so I thought, oh, we're just going to drill these holes in the cabinet to drain it. Well, actually, because of where the board was, it creates this wind tunnel. So more water was getting into the board.
Oh.
And you could actually see like 2 inches of you. Obviously, after a drain, you'd see the residue of where the water was that just corroded the mods on the back of them. It was just terrible. So I had heard about Daktronix. I wanted to, hearing about them, hearing how people talk highly about them in the industry. I'm like, okay, well, why don't we just become a Daktronix board? Well, unfortunately, that didn't happen until I got to Southern Illinois, that didn't happen until I got into South Bend. And that was the first question I actually asked in my interview was, what type of video board do you have? Oh, you have a Daktronix board. Like, oh, awesome. I've always wanted to work with it. So when I first got here, I got a chance to learn from some amazing folks through some of the online trainings and some on-site trainings. Kind of getting familiar, the board was installed maybe 3 years after I had gotten there, or before I got there. So it's still a relatively new board. Technology, as we all know, kind of starts to get a little older. And while sometimes things didn't always work right, the one thing I always could count on was the fact that I could call my rep, or I could call the hotline and be like, they could walk me through whatever the issue might be if it's an emergency, or they send a technician out. And part of that came down to when a couple of years ago, we had the All-Star game in South Bend, and the final ML minor league All-Star game, actually. And our board was just looking a little rough. It had been a few years. The louvers on the front, they were starting to come off because either glue or screws or whatever the case might be. So Daktronix actually replaced every louver, made it look pristine and crystal clear. And that right there was, I already knew Daktronix was a great partner, but the fact that they put that time and effort into making our board look perfect for the All-Star game it really showed me why I want to stay as a Daktronix partner.
That's a great start here. And just to kind of get like a time frame of all this, when did you start with the South Bend Cubs? Was it 2014, you said?
Yeah, so my first season was in 2014. It was the last year of the Silverhawks, so we were still a Diamondbacks affiliate. And then we went to the Cubs after our we became a Cubs affiliate in late September. I think like it was September 24th or September 25th is when we signed the PDL with the Cubs. And, of course, that means everything has to change. So all your black and yellow signage from the Silverhawks or your Diamondbacks colors, everything had to change. Mm-hmm. One of the things I've learned is you have to help wherever is needed. If you're going to try to make it in this industry, you have to be able to jump in wherever you see a need. And our marketing person had actually went on maternity leave right before we switched to the Cubs affiliate. So they needed somebody to work on promotions and work on a few other things. So I kind of helped fill that role. And when she decided our marketing person wanted to be a stay-at-home mom, I kept the marketing job, and that's kind of how I got into the whole marketing world of now you're doing promotions and social media and all this other stuff. So long story short, though, I got here in 2014. The board was already 3 years old, and then by the time we had the All-Star game in 2019, that was 10 years of technology. So the fact that Daktronix was able to squeeze some extra life out of it was fantastic.
Yeah, and even when you said the All-Star game was 2019, correct?
Yes, 2019.
Okay, and then it's like it looks like maybe 4 years later we replaced that again with new technology again. Can you tell us kind of what the process was to looking for that new technology to replace that board?
Yeah, it was definitely something that I spent a lot of time on because I wanted, whenever you especially work on a city project, you really only get one shot at it. And so I had to have all my ducks in a row and make sure that all the proposals of the city were where they needed to be. And they understood the reason why does the South Bend Cubs need a brand new video board. Mm-hmm. So I had worked with the city on that with our Daktronix rep as well. And this is why we need this stuff. It's easy to be like, yeah, I want the best and the brightest, which if I could recommend anybody in this industry, if you're asking for something, ask for all of it. if you think that you don't need those the net in front of the video board, or if you don't want the extra clips player, ask for it anyway, because stuff is going to get redlined on your budget item, and so you need stuff ready to cut. So having all said all that, we actually got everything I wanted, so it was pretty awesome to have all that technology, and now we had the latest and greatest going from the V7000, which was running on Windows 7, to having to use uncompressed AVIs, mind you, to okay. now being able to render something in a matter of minutes and throw it into as an MP4 file and look it out in the video board. Our process of editing headshots alone. I mean, right now we're in the process of cutting up our green screen headshots. It would used to be like a 2-hour process per headshot when you have to do the uncompressed AVI and all the other stuff. So then we finally cut it down to now we've got headshots that we're cranking out in a matter of, you know, 15 minutes from the green screen edit to exporting and putting on the video board.
And I suppose layering and stuff, not having to worry about that, and being a 7000 probably helped out as well. But it's this reminds me of when I first started at Daktronics after my internship was over. I helped out in our control systems group for marketing. And it was right around the time when Show Control was starting up and Venus 7000 was there. So you're talking about the uncompressed AVIs and different things. It was always, if we're doing a demo of Show Control for someone, they had to check the box if they currently have a Venus 7000 or not. Because if they did, there's a whole list of things you'd say like, hey, you don't have to do that anymore. You can now do this. But if they didn't have it, they wouldn't understand. So it's kind of making me think about that when you were saying that now. So you have what, Show Control system up and running now, so it's been a lot easier to work with?
Oh, yeah. It's phenomenal because we have pretty much everything tied into one button. It's really cool, and you can just do a trigger fire, and you've got everything is happening at once, whether that's the, you know, if you've got a transition that you're trying to go to a replay source, and you've got all these other weights and times built in, so you can have a bug pop on instead of having to build it in a switcher and have your bug pop on through there. We can do it all through Show Control. And it helps us, especially today when minor league teams are being asked to do so much more. Not only are you doing a board show, you also now have to do a broadcast, and you're doing everything in-house. So you can split your broadcast and your board show, but still do it all out of the same switcher, because you've got all of your board elements can come just straight out of Show Control versus having to layer them on your program output, and then that goes out to the board, but then it's also going to be seen on broadcast.
Yep, that's a great. I mean, I eventually want to kind of dive into that too, because it's, you're not just an operator these days. It's, everything's a broadcast online within the facility itself. But just kind of thinking about this board then, you mentioned, you know, ask for everything when you get it. Was this kind of the first time you've been involved in an upgrade? I know you mentioned you're riding like 2014. The board was there 2011. I don't know, from your previous jobs too, like, is that something you've always just shown up and there is a board there? Was this your first time actually being a part of the proposal process from beginning to end?
Yes, actually, this was the first time. The two other jobs, full-time jobs that I had with the minors and then with Southern Illinois, the decisions to MIP, to buy the boards have already been made. They already had the boards. They were coming in place. I was just really the content creator at the time. So this is my first opportunity to actually go through the whole process. And Joe Hernandez, our sales guy, was phenomenal with that, to be able to just tell me what was available to me. Like, he asked the questions like, so what are you looking for? And I would explain, here's my problems. Here's the pinch points that I'm having. Here's what would really help. And he was able to put together products really that helped support our production. We obviously wanted a board that was the biggest and greatest in the Midwest League. We knew we weren't going to be the biggest in town with Notre Dame just, you know, down the road, but yeah. We wanted to get at least as big as we could, and we were actually able to still utilize the structure too, so that was able to save money in one area that we could put to another. So we were able to reutilize the same steel structure. But so we have a beautiful board that has a much smaller millimeter. I think we went with the 10 millimeter, I want to say.
Yeah, it looks like you went from a 15 down to a 10.
If Justin's the stats guy, Chris, so he'll always have his stuff ready.
I love the stats guys don't get enough love, honestly.
Okay, we can move on. What's the next topic?
A 10 millimeter board now, and then we also were able to get our clips player, which we actually use more for broadcast than we do for in-venue, because all our clips will play off of Show Control anyway. So the clips player was more about helping us with our broadcast side. And Live Server, the new score bug program that Daktronics acquired, we're able to utilize that now for our broadcast. We were originally using another software that was trying to connect through a serial port, and sometimes data worked, sometimes it didn't work. But now everything can integrate with DAC stats. So that makes, again, one less operator I have to worry about in that end. Then we got the obviously brand new computers to process all that. Everything is all KVM, so it's all in one network. So it just makes, and of course the new home plate board as well, which ours was actually out of the home plate board that was installed. It was actually installed in 2013, just months before I got here, but it was an older product already. It was something that was available. The city was able to buy, you know, at pennies compared to maybe what it would have been, but it was already kind of an older product. So there wasn't much in the way of parts for it. So that had to get replaced. And with our renovation coming up, which, you know, we'll talk about later, we're actually going to have to repurpose that because we're going to put in a new ribbon board across the stadium, and that's going to go kind of in its place. So, keeping that in mind, knowing we had a big renovation coming up as it was, we put a home plate board behind home plate now that we could potentially move to a new building and utilize it for wayfinding signage.
Nice, nice. You've got so much going on there. You went from kind of the production side to the different pieces of technology that you're putting in different areas. I just want to go back to that main board really quick. You mentioned the pixel pitch difference and the larger size. Is that something that you're really noticing the difference on game day from what you had to what you have today? And are your fans noticing that?
Oh, yeah. We definitely can tell a difference. Our fans can tell that with our the last year of our old board in 2022, you could tell where mods started and ended. Like, you could see squares of how the mod sat. Now it's seamless. It's high definition. The colors are just so much brighter. And where our sun sets, the video board is sitting facing west. So when the sun is setting in the west, you know, during most games, which it does, the brightness really helps, because our old board, you couldn't really look at it or see what was on it maybe for about 20 minutes or so a day. But now we have a board that you can actually look at it whenever, anytime during the day, even that sun is beating directly on it, and still be able to see and read everything. So there's definitely a noticeable difference in that.
And is this something, I mean, even with the increased resolution, is, you know, we talked about it probably affects sponsorship opportunities, but was your layout of the board the same and just looked better, or did you kind of do an overhaul on your layout of the board, like during an actual game?
So the one thing that we really wanted to do was have total control of what that space looks like, and mm-hmm. removing the ad cabinets, the static ad cabinets, was a big part of that. So we can go bigger whenever there's those big moments, those home run moments, those key moments in a game that you can amplify. We wanted to have full control to you know, take the sponsors off there for a moment, go into your big opportunity, your big on-field moment, and then obviously ads can go back up. But we kept it a little bit we kept some elements of the ads when they get placed, but for the most part, we changed it up with making the ads a little bit smaller, but also being able to rotate them, and then they can change it for the second inning. You know, we can do that now. Or if we wanted to have some animation on those ads during the half inning, we can do that. So that gives us so much more flexibility on the sponsorship side.
Yeah, it sounds like you can make them a little bit more dynamic there and more interesting for viewers as well. And you kind of mentioned a little bit more on that production side and how you're doing more than just the in-game board presentation. You're also doing this broadcast. So what does your game day production team look like? Is it like certain people focused on the broadcast side, certain people focused on the in stadium side, or do they kind of cross over, or what's that like?
So for our video production, we have just one team. It's our production team that does both the TV show and they do the board show. We have our DAC operator for the main video board, our DAC staff operator for the baseball side. You've got your audio for in venue, then you have your audio for TV. We only have one director that does both shows from a, you know, true baseball standpoint, cutting cameras, that kind of thing. We have one replay for both the video board and the broadcast show. So when you're calling your roll calls, you've got a video board operator that's listening for the roll call of replay. To when he hears that, he can trigger his replay animation, where the replay animation will then trigger by the director for TV, and it's for the most part seamless. Every once in a while, if you get off by a half second, you know, it's going to be noticeable on the video board. But for being able to have a crew of, you know, 15 on game day to do both a board show and an in-house TV production. That's pretty good. But, yeah. We've got a great producer in our production manager, Kaylee Sedlicek, our broadcast team of Brendan King, Max Toma. They do a great job of trying to tell a story. And so they'll talk to our producer, our TV producer, and say, hey, these are the stories we're looking to do. They'll try to build some packs off of it. So it's not just about showing the baseball side. We want to try to tell a story. And it's not always a baseball story. It might be about a young fan who's battling cancer that we want to spotlight during our game. Or it might be talking about a hot dog challenge that we did last year. We did the 9-inning hot dog challenge and just had some fun with that. So we're always about storytelling in any capacity, whether it's baseball or not.
But no, so like there's these different areas, and do you have, I can't remember if you said it though, how many cameras do you run with them? Do you have camera people, grips, and then do you have any like mounted robotic cameras you use as well?
We don't have any robotic IP PTZ cameras yet, but we're working on that for the renovation. Right now we run a 5-camera, technically 6-camera shoot for our games. Mm-hmm. We have 4 operators. We have your high home, your outfield, your first and third base sides. We have an RF camera that worms around, and I think it's RF is totally underutilized. I want to get a second one just because it's all about creating that moment and you know, showing fans and hyped fans on the video board, trying to get the crowd to cheer. So I'm hoping to add a second RF camera. But we do have a 6th camera, which is just a tiny Marshall that sits in our broadcast booth, so we can go to the broadcast booth and reset for the 4th inning. Introduce our broadcasters. Again, they're talent too. They're just like the baseball players. So we want to identify them and people recognize them. I'm really hoping that in the future, as we continue this renovation, that we'll have on our second level that will eventually be built, we're going to have, PTZ cameras that can look down the foul lines.
Oh.
Maybe we're adding a beauty shot on the rooftop across the street. We have these beautiful apartments that sit just next to the stadium that our owner, Andrew Berlin, had built for the city. Put a PTZ camera up there for a fun bump shot coming back from break.
Yeah, sure.
There's so much we can do with technology now that doesn't always have to be manned. Like, it could be a pretty cool shot with one operator that's got, 4 cameras that he's controlling with a robotic controller. That's something we hope to do in the future. But we're a pretty basic show, and I always like to say we try to focus on the meat and potatoes and add the sizzle later.
Yeah, there you go.
That's a good way to put it.
I was going to ask even how you look to improve, because you said it was installed in before 2023, so you've had one full season with it, with the new display and some of those boards, and what you were going to do into the next year if you've kind of evolved it and how you're looking at it. And you're already talking about expanding and adding different things, but in terms of the production, have you kind of learned, okay, this is the kind of layout we've worked with and this is kind of what we did last year, and now we've got some other ideas to take it to the next level?
Because you're not going to change it right mid-season, so it's one of these, okay, you got to wait maybe to implement it till next year.
Exactly. And when we put our layout together with the Dectronics creative team, actually helped us with our layout, we went into that knowing that we wanted to keep this for about 2 years. This is the look we want to hang on for 2 years.
Okay.
And then that gives us an opportunity to evaluate, okay, this is what worked. This will take us into the renovation. And then how do we utilize the renovation? Is there some of the steelwork that we can build into the new look? Is there any new features that are going to be added with the renovation that we can enhance the board? So we went into the 2023 project knowing that we've got to get at least 2 years out of this graphics package, out of this layout, out of this look, to try it out, see what worked, and how do we take that to the next level with the renovation in 25.
Okay, yeah, I was going to ask when the renovation was happening. So it sounds like you've got 2 years and then the renovation will happen. So that's this year will be that second year and then the renovation after this year.
Correct. And our renovation will probably end up going into two phases as it is. It's such a big project. So the second level being the first one, and then the second part of it being more some outfield elements. And with that, of course, it's going to come to renovations to the control room as well. We're probably working in I don't even want to guess what the square footage is. I might make myself depressed if I knew how much space, that little space I was working with, but trying to expand our footprint a little bit because we have outgrown this. The stadium was built in 1987 for season in 88 and have absolutely outgrown with the way technology is today. We've outgrown the space. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the fact they were being asked to do an in-venue show and then do a broadcast show, and then all your racks have to sit somewhere. You know, right now, we have, all our racks just sit right behind us. So with the way technology is nowadays, that you have to keep that in a nice climate-controlled, cool environment. Mm-hmm. So building that rack room for us is going to be key, and then working with Daktronics to get all that moved over. And again, we talked about before the new ribbon board and being installed as well.
Yeah, it sounds like you've got everything kind of lined up. Did you look at kind of outside sources to see, okay, we've seen this happen over here, we've seen this happen over here, and we kind of want to incorporate those ideas, or is a lot of it just from what you're experiencing with what you've got and what you kind of foresee, say we've got the vision for this already and we want to go forward?
I've been lucky enough to also be a freelance operator with other organizations. So I've worked with Notre Dame, and so I've seen what their control room is. I get to work with the Chicago Cubs and work in their control room as a freelancer. And so I see what's worked for them and the things that haven't worked for them as well.
Okay.
I've gone around to other organizations and other parts of the country as part of this job, not the South Bend Cubs job, but as a freelancer, and I've seen what's worked elsewhere. And so I've taken all that to consider, how can we lay this out? Because again, this is my first control room build too. So how do we lay this out? How do we make it work when you're asking people to do more with less? How do we maximize the opportunities with our operators and with the space that we have? So it took a lot of time, and I even was thinking about this during COVID. You know, this has been years in the making of how do we improve this room. And it's gone through different iterations and trial and error, and what obviously works with budgets. But I think we finally are at a point now that we have something that's going to work for all parties, and kind of looking forward to seeing that come to fruition.
And this might have tied into kind of what you already said, but from my question is going to be, you know, Justin, with marketing even too, of the, you know, where do you go to get inspiration for what you do at your getting, aside from obviously your Daktronics resource is probably top of the list, but if is there any
naturally,
yeah. But I was just curious, you know, like, if is there like publications or different things, or is it just simply going to other events is kind of where you go to get some kind of inspiration to know what you want to do next?
It's definitely going to the other events. I think we can all agree that being in the industry, we can't go anywhere and enjoy an event ourselves anymore. I mean, we're always going to spot, look at that item on that board. I wonder if that's whatever pixel, or, I love that graph. I'm going to take a picture of this because I want to try to replicate and do something. We can't go anywhere in professional sports and not think about our job. Is that the same case for you guys?
Yeah, I was just going to tell Justin, I didn't even bring it up this time. I usually find a way to bring this up. We called it the Daktronics curse when we first started the podcast, but now it just seems like it's an industry curse. But it was, we had the same examples I always had with the friends going to see a, you know, Timberwolves game. And I'm like, oh, what millimeter pitch is that center hung up there? What's that? And they're just telling me to shut up and watch the game. Like no one's thinking like that. No one cares. Or anytime there's like a big event now, we always get text messages from like our parents and stuff saying, oh, is this board yours? Is this yours? So yeah, I'm not sure if it's a curse anymore. Maybe that's too aggressive, but it seems like more and more people we talk to, it's that exact same thing. You can never just put a filter on your glasses or over your eyes and go to a game normal, like a normal fan would.
Right. Yeah. And blessing or curse, whatever it might be, we get to see things others don't. You know, we'll pick stuff out of, oh, I've noticed this, or I see this, or I know how they've accomplished that. So I think it's kind of a cool opportunity for us, because we can just say, hey, this is, you know, this is how this works. It's pretty cool. But no, I do get a chance to take some things from other teams. I'll look at social media. I think minor league baseball is all about borrowing other people's ideas.
Idea hacking.
We've heard the idea hacking term before.
I like the term idea hacking. I'm going to start using that.
There you go.
But, you know, we all work together. We're all, you know, we're not really in competition with each other. We're all kind of under this one baseball idea of, hey, we're in our markets. This worked for us. May not work for you, but maybe you try this and not that. I think one of my favorite resources is working with the folks in our affiliation. Hunter Horstein, who's down at Myrtle Beach, he has we love to talk about how we push each other. They'll do something, and I'm like, oh, I think we could do that, and maybe we can even improve on it. So then we try something else, and then Hunter goes, oh, they're doing that. Well, I have to try this. So we really push each other to be, you know, the best team that we can be.
Yeah, you're trying to entertain people as well. It's not just that, oh, we're trying to get people butts in seats, right? You're trying to add an element of entertainment along with the game itself, and it's on that extra level. And you mentioned, you know, there's a lot more that goes behind the displays as well. It's not just a TV that you plug in and turn on and boom, there it is. That we noticed that as that industry blessing, we're going to call it now.
There you go, Justin.
And we know behind the scenes things happen, right? So there's a service aspect of it too. We don't just hand you the keys and walk away usually. So can you tell us a little bit about some of the service aspects of your display there?
Oh, I mean, if it wasn't for Casey, our technician who comes down from Indianapolis, I don't know how we'd operate with the old board. You know, Casey found ways to make it come to life when, you know, either there were ribbon cables that were having problems or, you know, he'd spend hours trying to track down an issue and then he'd call me up to the board so I could see it. And, that way I can learn. And I've learned so much from him on how these boards operate that but near the end of our old board, he says, "You don't need me. You can replace all this stuff now." So it was kind of cool to learn from him, but I don't think he ever gets enough credit for, you know, being that guy on the ground that has such a vast knowledge. I can call him at any point in time and ask a question and you know, barring it's not, you know, 2 a.m. somewhere or a drunk dial, which I've never done in my entire life. You know, it's the service side is what makes Daktronics Daktronics. Yes, the product is good, but, you know, we know technology is going to fail. As much as you try to prevent it, it's going to fail. So why not put your emphasis onto the service? And I didn't mean for this to be a sales pitch on the Daktronics service side of it. It really is not meant to be. It's just that's the experience I've had. They've just been so good to work with. And whether there's a problem that they can't solve right away, they put people on it and find a way to get it solved.
Well, that's awesome. And you definitely probably learned more because it wasn't as big of a pressure as the job you had prior where you had to learn because it had to get fixed. You were learning alongside Casey, so it probably made it a little bit more enjoyable and a little less stressful that way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, we've created a bond over the things that we've learned. And sometimes he'll see things like, I don't know why it's doing that. Like, I don't know how that happened. Like, but we would laugh about it. Like, well, we've created another South Bend rule here with whatever technology has decided to not work for us. But no, it's been phenomenal with him and Val, my contact out in South Dakota. I actually miss going out there. I know a lot of people will never say they miss going to South Dakota, but I actually enjoyed going out. We have our baseball meetings and because that's, again, we talk about learning from people. Mm-hmm. We'd see what are the other major league teams doing there. What graphics are they coming up? What are their board layouts?
Is that
so
the user group?
Going there. Yeah, the baseball user group.
Okay, yeah, okay.
I was like, we didn't even have that in the prep for the show, and I'm like, oh, sometimes we always say, have you ever been to South Dakota? And usually the answer is no.
Yeah. Sorry, we got excited there. I didn't mean to interrupt you as you're going there. We were like, oh, is that the user group that he's talking about? But yeah.
Oh yeah. No, but because there's such a great networking opportunity there that yeah, you can do some stuff through Zoom. And you can still see, but there's just something missing about that human element and connecting with somebody, which I think is why we love what we do in this industry as it is. We're making connections with people. It's the board that's connecting with the fan that's helping them, you know, cheer the team on, or it's being informative, or it's creating that connection. So I think that's why I personally love being in South Dakota for that, is because you create that connection. You can learn from somebody.
Awesome. Yeah. No, we always like having people come out here. It's usually a shock for people when they come out here and they see the buildings and the Daktronics campus, we call it out here. But
well, yeah, it's because they fly into Sioux Falls and then they kind of have to drive almost an hour up the road. And then all of a sudden, boom, you run right into Daktronics on the right side of the road there.
Fun fact, on my first trip was a snowstorm going from, was it Brookings, I would guess? No. What's the airport that we would have flown into? Probably
in Sioux Falls.
Yeah, Sioux Falls.
Yep. We would have come in from Sioux Falls. So our poor intern that drove the van that day, he had to pull over to the side of the road because it was a little bit. We had a later flight because of the weather, and we had to pull off. Like I can't see the road, so for your safety, I'm going to kind of hang out here for a minute. And I was like, hey, I'm great not going off the road, so that's cool. Take your time. I'm in no hurry. So we obviously the blowing snow subsided, but that's part of the problem being in baseball is that the only time you can really have a meeting like that is in January.
I was going to say that it's a very limited time where you can do that stuff for baseball, and then it's the same way for like athletic directors is the summer, but yet they want to go places in the summer. But it was when you were talking about two of all these different things, when and it wasn't me because I was an intern 18 years ago, and I don't remember having to do that, so it definitely wasn't me. But but just everyone coming together, I remember the first user group I sat in here in Brookings, and that's when I had thought coming in as a sports fan, right, is that everyone – rivals were rivals, and it was the Red Sox or whatever and the Yankees guy giving each other a hard time but laughing and being okay with it. It was just like you started to realize, like you're saying, there's no real enemies or rivalries even in a sport that you grow up just watching on the one side and you think that they would not get along, but they're all in the same industry and everyone just loves sharing their ideas and getting together and talking about it.
Mm-hmm. And that's really where I made some great connections and talked with folks that will email still constantly to this day, like, hey, did you try this? Or have you made this work? And I think it also has helped that the minor league fall meetings happened this past year so we could all reconnect again. But, you know, having folks that have, you know, have a Daktronics display, you can easily say, oh yeah, I did this. I was able to make it work by, you know, trying this option was always a huge help.
Yeah, that's awesome. Sharing ideas and helping each other get better. And I'm kind of looking here. We're getting kind of towards the end. I've got a couple last questions here. I was thinking, you've mentioned earlier, if you could give any advice, you'd tell somebody to go for all of it and sign up for, you know, their entire dream list.
Which we're okay with.
And then they can start cutting from there if they have to, right? Because we understand everybody's got a budget. But, but other than that, is there any other advice you'd give to somebody in your situation looking to improve the technology at their ballpark?
I think it goes back to what we were just talking about with sharing. Like you don't know what you don't know unless you know.
Yeah. No, it makes perfect sense.
It sounds like a crazy way to say it, but in order to improve your stadium, in order to improve your building, your experience, you have to know what else is out there. And so by leaning on people that you work with in the industry, make friends, even if you're in your league. They may not have the same capabilities as you, but maybe they've got some ideas on, well, we don't have the same amazing technology, but if we did, we'd do this. And so you come up with ideas that other people have had that are dreaming of having the technology that you have. The other thing I would say is just get involved. Don't say no. I got to where I am today with the South Bend Cubs because I just kind of filled a need. They needed somebody to be in marketing. They needed somebody to run social media. They needed somebody to, help tamp the grounds. Just fill a need and wherever that need might take you. You never know. You might end up deciding maybe you love being a grounds crew member or you love creating TikToks, which I hate.
You hate vertical videos? Or that's our videographer here. He hates it anytime we ask him for vertical videos, but...
Oh my gosh. I grew up and again, this goes back to how you're trained. I learned in 16:9 video, but not 9x16 video. So it's right. Like anytime somebody has a vertical video, I just cringe. I'm like, come on, guys.
I joke because I've seen that there's a meme that shows that our eyes are horizontal that match the 16:9 video. They're not vertical on our heads. So people joke like that when they hate vertical video.
So good. I'm glad I'm not the only one then that sees that. But yeah, really just get involved and volunteer to help in other areas because you just don't know what you're going to like unless you try it.
So try it, put yourself out there, and you might end up with a great job like Chris here at the South Bend Cubs. And Chris, we want to thank you for coming on and sharing everything that you did today and telling us all about your job and what you've got going on at the ballpark.
Oh, great. I appreciate it, guys. And I'm always an open book. So if anybody out there that's listening to this has ideas or needs, feedback, look me up at the South Bend Cubs. I'm happy to share some stories.
Awesome. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Daktronics Experience Podcast. Please subscribe at your favorite place to listen to podcasts to keep up with our latest episodes.